The other day, I had a talk with a friend and a new person I met that night, actually. And it just struck me how skeptic they were of NATO and how their worldview was basically that, you know, Putin, for instance, is just a, you know, a naughty boy in a schoolyard. And he's trying to tease us. He's trying to provoke us into doing something. That's, you know, how I felt their view was. And furthermore, you know, that he's trying to provoke us into doing something and that we can just, you know, stop letting us be provoked and then that's it. Then, you know, just turn the other cheek. And then if he hits us, then, you know, the school teacher would come over and save us. No, there is no school teacher. We are the ones who have to take the calculated decisions about the risks that we face. And I don't want to be the one who makes the wrong decision about those risks. I want to face those risks. And I think we should communicate how those risks are today without, you know, without militarizing our society. But still, we have to communicate that. And that's what I took from that quote.
I so, agree.
A long story, but it's I think it's important, and I do want to read the whole report again. And actually, I want to that's more in a personal capacity, but I want to post it, you know, piece by piece on Facebook and maybe Twitter too, and give my thoughts on why some of these articles are relevant for today.
Ulrich, I do want to say thank you for sharing that quote with me. I do agree with you. NATO as a whole has played an influential role in terms of protecting our community. And as an organization, as you know, NATO does have a number of member states that work very closely together. People to date question the work that is being done by NATO. And I'm the first one that will admit to this. There are some critics, many critics, who argue that NATO is obsolete. There are people that question the relevance of NATO. There are some critics who state that NATO, if anything, is only making problems worse. But to all of those critics and to all of those individuals who continuously scrutinize the validity of NATO, I want you to look at the history of NATO. I want you to look at the formation of NATO. NATO has been in existence for a long period of time. To date, there are various organizations and associations that are affiliated with NATO for a purpose. Now, as you all know, the NATO Association of Canada, what we do is we engage with the youth. We engage with various delegates and various diplomats in Canada and in an international scale. What the association does is we have a platform. We have various programs. And each week we have our team of program editors release publications educating the public about ongoing issues in international relations, global affairs, and diplomacy. And as you made a fundamental point when you stated that engaging in dialogue and educating people about ongoing issues is crucial to people understanding these issues. Now, for those who argue that NATO is obsolete, ask yourself, why is it that you think NATO is obsolete? And how do you vision our world without NATO? Who would protect the certain members and certain member states from an attack if Putin were to decide to attack Poland, for instance? I can say this firsthand. I spent a little over a month in Poland with my grandma a few months ago. And when the people there, when my friends found out that I was doing some work for the NATO Association of Canada, they asked me about my opinions pertaining to the relevance of NATO. And what I did is I discussed the history of NATO. I told them, I talked about the work that I did and that I'm currently doing for the association. And once they had the opportunity to learn more about what NATO does and what NATO represents, automatically that opinion that NATO is obsolete and NATO lacks any relevance was completely diminished. So I think the most important thing that people can take away from this message is that, will there always be critics? Yes, there will. But the best thing that you can do is to educate yourself about the history of NATO. Understand why it is that it currently exists to date. And look at various reports and publications that are released by experts about the work that's been done by NATO in the past, and look at the reports that state the work that NATO is currently doing. And if you can picture our world without NATO, then I would love to hear from you, and I'd love for you to contact me directly. As you all know, my email is surma.legal@gmail.com. And I'd love to talk to you. Anyways, with that being said, Ulrich, I want to move on. And again, thank you for sharing that quote with us. I remember our president, the president of the NATO Association of Canada, Julie Lindhout, sharing those quotes. And it was during the dinner that we had while the 62nd ATA General Assembly took place. And that definitely was a memorable night for me. But in addition to the 62nd ATA General Assembly, Ulrich, I also want to touch on additional conferences that you have attended. So to all of our listeners tuning in today, I want to mention that Ulrich recently, he just got back, attended the Riga Future Leaders Forum to discuss new policy ideas and options on NATO-Russia relations. So as a representative and as someone who attended the Riga Future Leaders Forum, can you please tell our listeners what that experience was like for you and what were some of the main points that you took away from this conference?
Sure. I think, well, first of all, I mean, it was great to meet so many other like-minded young leaders from all over Europe and North America. I think we had 56 leaders from 24 different countries. And just like, you know, the ATA conference in General Assembly in Toronto, we had panel debates, we had workshops, networking, dinners, and so. And we had former NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen come, and Carl Bildt was there, and a lot of NATO people, basically. It was a very interesting conference. And I got the opportunity to meet mature students and young professionals from all these countries, and our conversations, I think, gave me an intimate feeling of what's going on around Europe and America right now. And it also gave me friends, not just in the Baltics, but for instance, I met this one person, a very dear friend of me now, Frank from Cameroon, who works at the African Union. He's with the Special Envoy on Women, Peace and Security in Addis Ababa. And, I mean, basically, we became pretty close quite quickly, and he invited me, you know, to come visit him somewhere in Africa, and he would join up with me, and we would travel. So already there, you know, Yatta gives me a wealth of opportunities, I think. And on the points about Russia and the relations there, I think my main takeaways would be that we have to be skeptical about, you know, the dialogue that we have with Russia and also the dialogue that we have inside our own countries, because I think some of what was said was was perhaps a bit too elitist. There is a lot of skepticism in Europe about, you know, what's happening right now with Russia and why is it doing this one thing and the other. And isn't it just because NATO is, you know, poking the bear? And shouldn't we just stop poking the bear? And I suppose my main takeaway was that we can't afford to not, you know, have a tripwire, to not be able to at least trigger a political and military action from the NATO countries. And right now, what we don't have in the Baltics and in other, you know, Eastern European countries is that tripwire. We're setting it up, and some of it has already been set up. But it's just not enough to really decrease the risk and even increase the risks for Russia in case they want to try an attack of some sort, to really deter. And we need deterrence. What we don't want, and this is where the skepticism comes in and has to be very healthy, what we don't want is to escalate the situation. And this is where, you know, pacifists and other people, and some of the people, my friends who I talk to almost every day about these topics, their ideas come in. We have to be certain we don't escalate the situation, because that would, you know, lead to potentially a nuclear war. But the thing is, I mean, right now we see so many things that Russia does without talking to us, without trying to communicate what it's doing. And the whole point of NATO is to, of course, safeguard what we do, but it's also, you know, to communicate in a coordinated manner what to Russia and to other potential adversaries what we're doing, so we don't miscalculate, so we understand each other, so we have a coordinating mechanism for de-escalation. It's not just for escalation, it's for de-escalation as well. That's why we have this coordination within NATO. And I think the main takeaway for me was, you know, we need to improve NATO strategic communications, so we know that we can deliver, you know, communication to the, we can communicate to the public inside NATO what we're doing and how we're trying to de-escalate the situation, and basically tell the public that it's not us who's threatening, you know, to shoot a nuclear missile against the Danish island of Bornholm, or trying to, you know, simulate a bombing run from a Russian bomber on this same island when all of the Danish elite is there. So we have an internal strategic communications challenge, and we have an external strategic communications challenge, because right now we can't get to talk to Russia very well, and we need to be better at that. So I think that's my main takeaway from Riga.